Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Why Simple Wins, Escape the Complexity Trap and Get to the Work That Matters. Our guest today is Lisa Bodell, founder and CEO of FutureThink, an innovative training firm for businesses. She is also the author of the new book, Why Simple Wins. Each day, more than 100 billion emails are sent and received, and on some days it may seem like most of those have ended up in your inbox. Lisa shows how we spend our days drowning in mundane tasks like meetings, emails, and reports, which prevent us from getting to the meaningful work that we value. In today's teleclass, Lisa will show us how to eliminate redundancies, communicate with clarity, and make simplification a habit. This will leave us feeling less overwhelmed, more empowered, and able to spend each day doing the things that matter. Lisa Bodell, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Great. Well, we're happy to have you, and I'm going to start with a simple question, which is, why did you decide to write this book, Why Simple Wins?
Well, thank you for asking me, because I have to tell you, it wasn't the original book I had set out to write, and it really came from a pain point that myself and my trainers were experiencing when we were going out and teaching innovation and change, because that's really what we like to do, is teach people how to change, teach people how to come up with new ideas. And we realized that people were having a really difficult time doing it, and we couldn't understand why. So we started asking people a question whenever we go out and do our training courses to figure out what was holding them back from really being more innovative. And I asked all these groups that we were training this question, and it was, what do you spend your day doing? And what really shocked me wasn't the range of results, but the consistency of it. Every single time we asked that question, people answered two things. What do you spend your day doing? Meetings and emails. So here we are trying to teach them how to be innovative, but they are literally drowning in mundane work. And so they can't get to innovation because they're drowning in this clutter. So we realized we really need to teach people how to operate with simplicity, to get rid of the clutter so they can operate on things that are valuable, that drive innovation, that create meaningful work. And I'll tell you, it's been such a satisfying project because people want to hug me like a therapist when I get done talking about the book, because it's so cathartic to realize that so much of our days we're drowning in things that are often self-imposed and completely unnecessary. And if we really focus on clearing that stuff out, we really could get so much time back, so much mental energy to work on stuff that matters.
Got it. Now, what do you mean by the simplicity mindset? And can you explain how that's useful to a business?
Very much so. I mean, what was interesting was when we were setting out to do the book is that I'm really big on tools. I'm this practical Midwesterner that really wants to give people the tools so they can get it done and create action. And so I started doing all these tools about how they could kill stupid rules and kill stupid meetings and get better emails. And I realized that that stuff doesn't matter until people realize that they adopt simplicity as their operating system, right? They have to have the mentality and keep simplicity top of mind. And the reason I say that is the first thing is you have to realize that you're part of the problem. See, everyone thinks that everyone else is the cause of complexity, when in fact it really comes from us. We often create the beast that we become a slave to. You know, one more meeting, one more report, because it's driven by risk and fear and all these other things. So what we did is we set out to figure out, how do you really get a mindset of simplicity? What does that look like? And what do you benefit by doing that? So when I say a mindset, I say this mindset, first of all, is one of being minimal. And because the art of simplicity is the art of subtraction. And we have to get comfortable by taking away things, getting rid of things. And that's hard for people to do because we're valued and rewarded for more. So first of all, it's being able to minimize things, having that mindset of minimizing. The second thing is having focus. So being able to focus on one thing at a time versus multitasking. And another thing is decisiveness. A lot of people, you know, kick the can down the road in terms of decisions, or they need too many people for input, or they're scared or don't feel empowered to do it. If you can start operating with simplicity, you start to become more decisive because you just want to get to action and get to things that matter. So that's what I mean by simplicity mindset, things like minimizing, things like focus, things like decisiveness. And the result of doing that is you really start to realize how much you waste your time, and you get rid of that stuff and you focus on what matters.
Can you talk a little bit more about the artist's attraction? I'm wondering, you know, for the worker who wants to not go to a meeting so that he or she can actually think or strategize or checks their email 3 times a day instead of every 30 seconds, how do you make decisions that aren't the norm in your workplace and not feel like you're going to get in trouble?
Well, let me start by answering the minimal part, and then I can get to that kind of decisiveness part. So getting people comfortable with minimizing is pretty easy to do. And they just don't think to do it because we're rewarded for more. That's part of the problem. So, you know, the more you manage, the more money, revenue you manage, the more people you manage, the more markets you manage, that's what you get rewarded for. So we rarely think about getting rid of the stuff that's not working. And in fact, I think getting rid of things or clearing away the clutter should be the first step people do every year before strategic planning begins. What are we going to get rid of before we start talking about what else we're going to do? And there's a few easy things that we teach people to do to start getting in the minimalist mindset. And we tell the bosses it's because it makes people more effective and actually you take wasted costs out of the system. So they get on board pretty quickly. A couple simple things that people can do is they can do a meeting audit like we did with Sprint and with Merck and look to kill 50% of their meetings. And I'll tell you, in each of those organizations, they killed up to 20% of their meetings and each person got back 2 hours of time a week. We just don't think to do it. We have these zombie meetings that get put on our calendar that we never think to kill because, well, they've always been there. There must be a reason for them. We don't question it. Another thing we tell people to do is hold a session with their team and call it kill a stupid rule and ask their employees, if you could kill any two rules that hold you back from being more effective at your job, doing the work that really matters, or being more innovative, what would you kill? And what's fascinating is they come up with many things. A lot of them aren't rules. They're cultural norms. They're annoyances like meetings and PowerPoint and layers of decision-making, expense reports, the need to get a budget approved after it's already been approved, not being able to work home on Fridays, that dress code stuff, HR policies. There's all kinds of things. But a lot of the stuff that they come up with are in their control, like meetings and PowerPoints and emails and how the team operates on a day-to-day basis. So, just the art of doing killing things, even killing a stupid rule, is a really powerful way to get in that minimalist mindset. And it starts to clear away the clutter and get people comfortable with subtraction, comfortable with saying no to things, comfortable with questioning the assumptions around how we work. And then that gets people to, frankly, be more decisive. That leads to that decisiveness and being able to tell people no and being able to take action on things that are within their control.
Got it. Now, why is excessive complexity so common in the workplace today?
Well, it's a few things. One is we're addicted to more. We're rewarded for it, and it's very hard for us to get to less. We also are addicted to processes versus looking at outcomes. We like steps in a process. We like things that can be measured. And really what's more important is the outcome, not just, the steps in the work. And the other thing is that we operate so much in terms of our behaviors creating complexity. It's risk, it's fear, it's power and control. And those things drive us, for example, with technology, to ask for one more report because it's easy to do. The data is there. Why not? And I say just because you can doesn't mean you should. We ask for one more report because we're scared. We ask for 5 more people to attend the meeting to make sure everybody heard it, to CYA. That's the kind of thing that creates complexity. And so what bosses need to do is give people permission to do less. They need to operate and say no. And they need to tell people that it is their job to identify things that are wasteful and to get rid of them. Then they'll start to do it. They need the boss to give them the empowerment and the permission. And then people will go crazy. You'll be surprised at what they'll do.
So once, let's say, this audit, meeting audit goes on and people become aware of simplicity and try to implement it through the artist attraction and minimizing and focusing and being decisive, how do we then know what meaningful work is?
This is very interesting. So one of the things or exercises that I do with people, and I'll give you an example because we recently did this with a group at Pfizer, is we have people create a T-chart. And on the left, you write down every day, and on the right, you write meaningful. And on the left-hand side under every day, you have people write down 20 things that they typically do in a week on a day-to-day basis. What is the typical work like for them? And when they're done writing it down, you then ask them to circle the things that are valuable. And by valuable, meaning it's valuable to you, it moves the business forward, et cetera. And what you find is that people circle very few things. And what that does is that enlightens them to say, wow, I spend a lot of my work on the mundane, on the complex, on things that aren't really moving the ball forward. And then you have them write down on the right-hand side things that they wish they could be doing or that they define as meaningful work. And they pause for a minute because, frankly, a lot of people don't think about it. And they start to write things down like, more time with customers. Spending time externally, not navel-gazing internally. Spending more time with my team and getting to know them and collaborating. Brainstorming, doing innovation, product development. Things that really, have revenue meaning. And you ask them to look at these lists. And it was fascinating with Pfizer. They said they didn't realize how much mundane work they did. They had never defined as a team what real meaningful work was and where they should be spending their time. And then they had a brainstorm of how they could move. You eliminate the things on the left-hand column and spend more time on the right-hand column. Because the reality is, as we say in the book, is complexity is the enemy of meaningful work because it takes you time away from valuable things. So that can be a really neat exercise for people to try because a lot of employees will say to their boss, I really wish I was doing more meaningful work. And when the boss looks at them and says, yeah, what would you like to be doing? They have a hard time articulating it. So this can get people really focused on what's important.
Great. So, Lisa, what are the myths of simplicity that people operate under, and how do you address them?
Well, it's interesting. There's, I think, a few things, three things I'll tell you. The first is simplification isn't just about minimizing things. It's important to streamline. Everyone thinks when you're simplifying, all of it is about getting rid of things, but there's lots of different ways to simplify. It can be about making things clearer. It can be about making things more repeatable because that makes it more streamlined and making things more accessible. So you have to think about simplicity in a real holistic perspective, and that's really empowering because it gives you lots of ways to get to the work that matters. The second myth is people shouldn't think that just because something is organized is that it's simplified. I think anyone listening in on this podcast that has ever been involved in a carpool understands that just because something is organized doesn't mean it's simplified. I mean, I've had a lot of carpool organizers almost put me under, I can tell you. But I can get so many sign-up geniuses and reminders and all this, but it becomes too much. So I think what people need to realize is just because it's a 12-step program doesn't mean it's the best approach for it. So we still want to be able to question things and get rid of what's not necessary. And then the last thing is this people's perception of more is what's valuable. They have this thing that by taking things away, it's a loss. And we become very attached to the things that we create, that we put into a system. And we think that by getting rid of it is that we've failed. And remember, things might have been relevant at the time that they were created. Like a lot of rules, for example, were very good at the time they were created, but they may have outlived their time. And it's time to make space for new things. So what we like to teach people is before they add something new to the system, force yourself to take one thing away. And you can also do that in your personal life. Before you add one more thing to your to-do list, what thing will you take away or give to someone else to do? And that way you'll get in that mindset again of minimizing, simplifying, streamlining versus filling that void with another mundane thing.
Got it. Now, let's talk about technology. I was slack-jawed when I read in your book that there are 100 billion emails sent and received each day. In what way can technology actually help to simplify businesses?
You know, it's interesting because when I was interviewing people for this book, I talked to the CEO at SAP, and I also talked to a bunch of people at the organization as well as in IBM. And what was really interesting in both organizations is they have made simplicity not only one of the taglines for business, like a marketing principle, a mantra for them, but they're trying to make it their new operating system. And, you know, as a technology company, they realize, just like I said in my book, that technology is a double-edged sword because people ask you, or they ask me, has technology helped us in terms of simplifying, or has it hurt us and instead created complexity? And the answer is yes. It has created such simplicity for us in the way of that we can have Google Docs and share documents, in the way that we have apps that let us do a simple task quite quickly, in the way that on our phone we can access tons of things that we never could before on one device. That's really beneficial. But the problem with that is just because you can doesn't mean you should. So especially right now with the advent of data, all the data that we have, that has compelled people to increase the amount of reports and reporting that we have to be 6 times greater than it was even 10 years ago. So if 10 years ago you had 1 report, now you have 6. If you had 10 reports, now you have 60. Because we think we can get access to data, why not slice it and dice it and look at more things? And the problem is we're spending so much time creating the report that people are reporting inside companies, at least this is what they found at IBM and SAP, they were spending so much time formatting the data, they weren't spending a lot of time analyzing it and using it. It was a wasted exercise.
Okay.
I think with technology, it's, you should absolutely embrace it, but realize when enough is enough.
Okay. You talked about some companies you've worked with. What other companies are great examples of simplicity? And maybe you could just briefly explain why or how.
Sure. I'll give you some examples that range from informal to formal. And the reason I say this along a continuum of embracing simplicity is some people aren't ready to go, you know, hog wild on it. So you can start out with small things. And the reason I say that is with simplicity, small things make a big difference. So it's things like at Merck, they realized they were getting too many emails and they wanted to cut it down. And when they asked people what kind of emails were really annoying and clogging their inbox, it was all those FYI emails, you know, FYI and people's silly responses to the FYIs. And so what they started doing is when they were sending out information-only emails, things that they didn't need a response on, they started their subject line with the phrase NNTR, which meant no need to respond. And what that did is that sent a signal to people that I'm just sending this out informationally, no need to be politically correct and email back and let everyone know that you read it. And in fact, when people did that, it was culturally frowned upon and they looked stupid. They cut down their emails by 18% just by doing NNTR in the subject line. Fidelity actually puts up do not enter, you know, that yellow caution tape around their cubicles within some of their business units 1 day a week to actually have a visual symbol that this is our thinking time. You're not allowed to come to us with new projects. This is time just for our business unit. P&G and GE have actually made it part of their strategic vision, and they have said to people that simplicity is how each business will be evaluated and each person will be evaluated. There are metrics in place within many business units around how they have simplified work and supported their teams in empowering them to do it. And even further along that continuum, P&G and Syngenta, those are two other companies I should mention, have actually started simplification teams that are resourced, budgeted, a lot of manpower too. And one of those companies is in the process of hiring a chief simplification officer.
Is that right? You know, wow.
Yeah, so it's cool. So you can get really formal or you can do the informal stuff. One more fun thing I'll tell you that was really cool. At Google, they started cut the crap committees. And this was all organic, right? And everyone I tell that to loves it because they're like, well, we can do that, right? It's a small thing. It designates people that their job is to look, you know, at everybody from kind of a bird's view approach, find the things that aren't working, and they get rid of them. And it's really empowering because it's a simple thing that makes a huge difference that most of us just don't have the time and energy to do. So that's really what I want to get across to people, which is small things, killing rules, auditing your meetings and killing them, defining meaningful work, setting up some quick things like cut the crap committees can really start to send a strong signal and make a quick win impact right away to cutting through complexity.
That's really interesting that simplicity is used as a metric to evaluate employee performance. So you get credit for meetings sliced and emails cut and cut the crap committees. It's measurable. Okay. Because in a more traditional workplace, that could be seen as insolence or, you know, a lack of diligence, maybe.
By simplifying something, you mean? It's a lack of diligence?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would argue absolutely not. And I think that the reason I can say that now is because the time is right. People can't take it anymore, right? And I know when people are doing a good simplification effort, it's when, frankly, it's a role that reports into the CSO or the COO, and not the CFO. Because when simplicity efforts report into the CFO, what that means is cost cutting, efficiency, and people 9 times out of 10 are given messages either overtly or subconsciously that we're going to try and get you to do more work with less. You're going to do work, you know, of two people versus one. And that's not what simplicity should be about. It's about getting to meaningful work to drive the business forward, not just cost cutting. So we really took a lot of painstaking effort to define, and one of our tools in our toolkit is simplicity metrics and defining for people what are the things we're going to measure against, because you don't want your simplicity effort to try and do too many things. So, for example, at Merck, they realized there were so many things they needed to simplify, meetings and emails and decision-making and processes, and they said, hold on, let's just tackle one of these at a time and get it right. And they focused on meetings. How are we going to run better meetings? How are we going to get rid of PowerPoint? How are we going to have clear agendas? How are we going to designate a decision maker? And they put metrics all around just that. And what was nice about that is, tying back to the simplicity mindset, it gave focus, it drove decision making, and it didn't try and tackle more and more and more. It focused on one thing only. So that's a whole bunch of advice, but I think the timing is absolutely right for people to embrace simplicity, because they can't take it anymore. They've got too much on their plate.
Oh, that's fascinating. The readers of Why Simple Wins are going to find a simplification toolkit in the book, and I was wondering if you could talk about that and how it walks people through the process.
Yeah. So the simplification toolkit, I love. I have to tell you, I didn't write one book. I wrote two. And the chapter 7 in the book is the whole top line of the toolkit. It gives really people really rich things that they can do, as well as quick win tactics to get started with instructions and everything. And then if they want the more detailed 13 tools, including a diagnostic, killing stupid rules, simplification questions to really get in that mindset, metrics, they can also buy the toolkit on Amazon. And we teach courses on killing complexity, and everyone gets the toolkit with it so they can use the tools, and there's 28 videos that go with it, blah, blah, blah. The reason I'm telling you this is I think that it's really great to read the book, but it's more important to put into action. And so the tools are really meant to get people started in 30 minutes or less, and the videos that go with it are 2 minutes or less that give you a quick technique to try every week. And that's how it sticks. You just got to try something.
Okay, so these videos and other things on Amazon, what do people search for?
Well, so what you could do is go on Amazon, and you could type up Why Simple Wins, and it will give you the link to both the book and the toolkit that you can buy online. And if people want to be able to access, get the toolkit, of course, they can call us. Or if they want to get access to the simplification tools and videos online, what people do is they can get access to our portal. And you can get access to it actually right off of our website, which is futurethink.com.
Futurethink.com. Okay, nice and simple. Is simplification ever a bad thing?
Yes. You know, I didn't expect to say that after I started writing the book, but I will tell you, when I got done, I realized some select few cases, you can oversimplify. And let me give you an example. So GE, when one of their groups, their legal teams, was streamlining their contracts, and they're famous for doing this, trying to get a contract down from 100 pages to one. Now, what I love about that challenge is it forces people to really cut away. You know, if you said, let's just cut out 20%, that's kind of lame. You know what people do. They cut out the easy stuff. They don't really put effort into it. You have to have an audacious goal. So they said 100 pages to one. And when they got it down to, I think they, in one instance, they got it down to one page. Here's what happened. They had to spend so much time explaining the acronyms, the jargon, and the stuff they cut out, that they were spending more time explaining the one page than having the original contract. So they oversimplified. So what they did is they put some of the stuff back in. It was 10 pages, which is a 90% improvement. And it was all the better. So audacious goals. And make sure when you test it that you haven't caused a lot more additional questions than you had in the past. That's kind of your litmus test.
Got it. Lisa, tell us how you practice simplification in your own work and in your own life.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's a few things. In my company, something we do every year is we kill our company. And it's interesting. It's the kickoff to our annual review. We do it in January every year. And what we do is we say all the things about our company that our competitors could do to put us out of business. And what that does is that actually highlights your weak spots. And we look at what's holding us back from being able to address those weak spots, and we eliminate them. We also have a whole session on killing stupid rules. I have to tell you, kill a stupid rule is the most powerful session you can do with your team because they can't believe the boss is letting them do it.
What are some examples of stupid rules you've killed at FutureThink?
Oh, my gosh. And trust me, they're all the rules that I created. Monday morning status meetings were terrible. They were terrible. They were an hour long. It became a task list of everyone rattling off their to-do list. It was boring. It wasn't outcome-driven. So we killed that meeting. We made it a half hour, and it was only a creative problem-solving meeting. And rather than a status, we changed it to what I need help with. And so it became very short. Every person had their name on it. They listed the 3 to 5 things they needed help with that week, problems they couldn't solve, and the meeting was cut in half, and it was totally outcome-driven. So that was very cool. That came out of a kill a stupid rule, and it wasn't really a rule that we had Monday morning status meetings, but it was an annoyance, and we approved it by doing kill a stupid rule together. HBO did kill a stupid rule, and they came up with so many rules that they decided to create a Google Doc internally. Put it up in the Google Doc, tell all the other business units about the rules they killed so they could learn from them. And I will tell you, simplicity creates jealousy. It created so much buzz from other business units. How come they get to kill stupid rules that other people started doing it too? And in fact, this team eventually did a kill a stupid rule session with their client, with Verizon, so they could actually have a better relationship and get rid of the things that were holding back them from having a better client-partner contract together. So there's lots of fun things I've done and our clients have done using very simple techniques.
Great. Now, how do you identify when something is a time suck? I mean, I think we all, I mean, there's some obvious examples, but how do you get to the trickier stuff?
Well, here's the thing to remember. So complexity is not about time management. Complexity is, it's not about being able to do more on your to-do list. It's about what's on your to-do list in the first place. That's a big difference. Right? Mm-hmm. What is on your to-do list? So I can check off a to-do list like nobody's business, but am I doing things that really matter? So how you can find out if something's not working is what we do with people is we say, we want you to list again all the tasks that you do in a week. And you could also do this for a year if you wanted to, but in a week is a pretty good starting point. And then you assign a time and a value to them. And from it takes low time or it takes a lot of time, It gives you no value in terms of driving the business or your life forward, and it gives a lot of value. And what we try and figure out is, if you are spending a lot of time on things that have no value, why are you doing them? And it's really enlightening to people. They're like, God, I never realized that. You know, is it an obligation? Is it a must-do for your kids? I don't know. Is it something the boss made you do? It allows you to find the spots that you can attack first. And then it also shows you, what are you spending very little time on that gives you tremendous value? And what can you learn from that and apply to the rest of your work? So, you know, most of us don't even take the time to list out what we typically do. And by doing that and figuring out what's really valuable and where you spend your time, you can readjust things and get rid of things pretty quickly.
Got it. We have time for one last question, and I'm wondering if you could briefly tell us how innovation and simplification are connected.
Oh, absolutely. Well, like I was saying when I first started writing the book, which is, you know, people want to be innovative, and they can be innovative, but they can't get to it. That's their frustration. They'll say, yeah, I want to be innovative. My boss tells me I need to. You tell me when I'm supposed to do it, when I get one more report, one more email, one more meeting. And so what we realized is they have the will, but they don't have the time. And so what we need to do is carve out that time by getting rid of the things that don't matter to make space for things that do matter. And that's where simplicity comes in. Simplicity to me is the front end of innovation. It's the very front end. You need to get rid of the things, weed the garden, eliminate the stuff, clear out the closet before you can make space to do the things that you really matter, or buy the more valuable things, or do the more valuable things for yourself, your family, or your work. People don't typically think of it that way. And I think that it's really important to get rid of the clutter before you start doing more.
Well, that is all we have time for today. A reminder that today's teleclass will be available on your conference website. If you registered through Eventbrite, you'll receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. And if you want to learn more from Lisa Bodell, go to futurethink.com. Our thanks to Lisa Bodell, author of Why Simple Wins, and thank you for listening.